Chevy Equinox with forward collision alert, automatic emergency braking, and available all-wheel drive. It's my ultimate mobile device. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule a test drive. Chevy Equinox. It's your choice. Own it.
I want you to think, if you could, of Betty, me, my sons, Spiro and Peter, and my brother Nick's sons, Spiro and Nico, and his wife, Dina, and my brother Peter's family, his wife, Georgia, his daughters, Connie and Leah, and his son, Speedo. Yeah, we have a tradition in the family, and Greek families do this. Name the first son after the grandfather, paternal grandfather. And all of us, and my mom, Betty, in the nursing home, listening to this. I hope you understand what it means to us, and I hope you enjoy this for what it is. Not a story of one man, but a story of a family spirit. A story of a family coming to America. The story of a Palikari, the brave one.
What does Palikari mean?
Palikari, brave, brave man. But not, on the other hand, you cannot be scary too much, to be scared, because when you are scared, you lose the scent of survival. You lose the scent what to do to survive, not to stand up, or how you can jump and hide and those things, you know. When you are in too much fear, you forget those things. You know?
You saw that?
Yeah, I saw it. A lot of people got killed because they didn't know what to do. Now, you have to be lucky to survive in the war, you know, because no matter what you know, or the artillery comes and breaks about 50 yards away from your head, you know, you get down. You're not Palikari anymore. You know, you get down, you say, now survival. To survive in the war, you have to shoot your enemy. That's the way they teach us. Otherwise, if you don't shoot and put your head down, they're going to take you anyway. Or somebody going to shoot you there, or you're going back prisoner. You never know if you're going to come back. That's why I've been immune to the fear. Like a lot of soldiers do that. You're not afraid anymore because you're walking dead when you're in the war. You have Elpidus. Someday you might believe, you know, but thinking every day you have the same thing for months, for years, if the last something might happen to you. That's what I said that time. You are alive, you forget about yourself, you try to survive the best way you understand, you know, or about food, or about how to fight. That's going to be stupid if you stand up and stay standing up. You know, you have to understand how to move and how to fight.
The time on this?
Survival. Nobody, yeah, we had some practice in the old country, but the practice is not the same like what you find in the war. Not at all.
Well, then,
when somebody shoot you, you don't think you have to cover yourself, to go behind something? Somebody comes with a knife to you, You're going to lift a chair if you have it and put it in front, right? That's survival.
You know, the thing about the voices, my brother Nick and I were a lot younger. I hadn't smoked for 30 years. And my brother Nick hadn't yet been stressed by his work in CIA and State Department. And we sounded like kids that we were, the kids we were. We sounded like we had the voice of milk drinkers, as we say. But my father's voice sounds true, especially true when he says the word communists. Hope you enjoy the Palikari Project with my father, produced by Jeff Carlin. It should, I hope, win some sort of awards.
Hey, thanks, John. Yeah, I hope we win some awards, but I'm not in it for the hardware. I'm really in it for the experience and the history lesson that your father has walked me through, and listening to his voice and you and Nick talk about his history and your family's history. That's really why I mean, it's a lot of fun. And like I said, I'm learning a lot about modern Greek history. So speaking of which, we will find our hero, pick up the story here with your father as he has returned from the front, trying to repelling the Italians. But then the Germans, unfortunately, are going to march through the country after the death of Metaxas. If you remember from the last episode, he was standing against the Nazis and the Italian fascist Italians, and the Ilhi Day celebrated in the honor of his standing up to them. But unfortunately, he dies, and things kind of go downhill from there for Greece. As Spiro will tell you and explain here, that he has returned back from Germany. But before he gets there, you ask him, where is God's role in all this and in fighting off the Italians? And the Germans show up and will march through the country, occupying it briefly, but then leaving it back to the Italians, the fascists to hold. A resistance is born out of that, but unfortunately it's supported by the communists, and Spiro will explain kind of what happens after that. And I also want to take a quick moment here to thank you for listening to this. You know, on behalf of myself, Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio, and of course, John Cass, executive editor and the man behind JohnCassNews.com, and of course, the Greek Orthodox American and husband to Betty and my good friend. And of course, his brother Nick, who you'll hear here as well. You know, if you really enjoy this, or if you don't, and you just want to be nice, review, click, give us the stars, share, tell your friends, subscribe. That's the biggest thing you can do. It really helps. Subscribe to the podcast here. But I hope you're enjoying our little project here, the Palikari Project, the tapes of John Cass's father. And if you missed part one, you can obviously check that out on the website, on John's website, on WGNradio.com. Find it on our social media. It's all up there. There's also a link there and that directs you to John's column. It kind of explains the piece here, but the gist is that really cool. John's family discovered some tapes that had been thought to be missing from about 30 years ago or so, 35 years ago. And there are tapes of he and his brother trying to get the family story from their father.
What about God?
No. We were going for a. They told us
what?
In the Albania. They told us the place we go now, there going to be fear personless fight. We better be brave. You know, if we want to win this line. And now we got to a place before sunrise, before dark yet, near to the line, but not too far, maybe 1,000 feet away. We are on the other side of the hill. First of them, Apirovitum, we call them. How you say it? Yeah, on the other side.
Cover.
What?
Cover.
Cover, yeah. We want cover. And now we wait the tallest, where you see the guns with the light in the air, photovoltaics, how do you call it? How do you say it?
Flare.
When you see flare in the gun, in the air, then you get up and move. We are in the war right away. We are in the fighting. And now we're waiting. And now, I don't know for what reason, we did go dark. They wait for the, when you can see 100 yards away. And I saw the cover we had there line up about 1,000, maybe 1,500 army soldiers, Greek soldiers. Everybody was doing their crosses, you know, everybody. And now I was happens to see those guys. They talk against God, against Christ. When you are back in the army, in the villages, or there's no war, you know, the army grew up already. That boy came from a village or wherever, and he talks, I don't believe in anything, those things. You know, the atheists, but not the time. Now, the atheists, they die right there, and they became Christians. They became people of God, and asked God to help them to be alive, you know.
Tell me the story of when you came back from the front. The Germans are there occupying you,
yeah,
with the Italian Carabinieri. What would happen? What was happening in the Courier?
Nothing happens, real.
I mean, they went
through Comata, you mean?
Yeah.
The people were against the Germans, bitter against the Germans, Italians, but now we got new enemy after the communists at last uncovered themselves, and we knew then they're communist party.
What were the people doing in the Choryo then? Remember that movie, the one movie?
What we were doing in the Choryo, working in the fields and have something to eat.
No dancing?
No. A German asked me, one German guy. He was not German, he was from next to Germany. The other country. They had occupied the time. German, Austria. Austrian guy. I call him over to have a cup of coffee. You know, he was a nice guy. He was nice, real nice boy. And I call him once in a while to have a cup of coffee because I want to know what's going on there a little bit if I try to get something out of him. And he asked me, he says, Spiro, why you Greeks don't sing, don't whistle songs, or why you never sing, you never... I said, listen, you know we are occupied. We are slaves to your country. I said, how you want me to be happy? And sing. To sing, that means you are happy. When you are sad, you don't sing, you cry. I said to him, but he was a nice guy, he didn't done anything to me. If it was another German, a Hutz, his name, he could kill me right there. If if I say that to him.
Hans?
Hans, his name was the other side, Hitler's boys.
SS.
SS, yeah.
What was he like?
He was mean to the Austria boys, to the mean, to the their own army.
Mavro Ruka?
Yeah, he had a darker color.
Jeff Carlin here again. A quick aside. I wanted to note here that Spiro was talking about the gentleman who from Cyprus or the, you know, that was the Italians. And this is an interesting time in Greece in history here. The Germans have pushed through with their heavy artillery and their tanks, and they've moved on to Africa. And they left the Italians in charge of Greece pretty much. And the Italians are trying to weed out any resistance or revolt because they're fascists and that's what they do. And they are posing as British, and it's well documented. You know, they have fake Brits, if you will. And they would come in and try to play games with the young people in the town to see if they would talk and trip up stories that maybe their parents were saying or the elders were saying. And obviously, as you know, Spiro will tell you, just wreak havoc on the nation and the people there. But he also, Spiro talks about the difference between, which is kind of interesting to note, in the German army, between the SS and like the general Wehrmacht, the general enlisted Germans, they're quite different people. You know, there were many who were much like Spiro in a sense that they were dragged into something by someone else, and then only until they really understood what they were in, it was too late. And so he talks about the difference between Hans, the SS officer who is drilling and in charge of the general enlisted German soldiers who really don't seem to care to be there. But, you know, that's not for me to say. But it's interesting to note the difference between the two types of German soldiers. You have the Hans, the SS officer who is very mean and drives even his own men, it sounds like, to pain and anguish. And then you have the general enlisted who are, just general soldiers, not of the SS, of Austrians, you know, occupied Austria. And so it's just interesting to note the differences between those two, as Spiro mentions here. And as we pick it up here, Spiro explains that the Germans have moved on to Africa and Egypt, and the Italians are left, and the family decides that they try to get the store up and running again and live life under this fascist regime.
One day, we decide to open up the store again after the Germans left from the store to make a little something, sell ouzo and some whiskey or wine, something. And we open up the store. And a guy came, Italian guy. He pretended he was Englishman because about a week before was a group, 5-6 Englishmen. They asked me on the way coming home from the farm to direct them. Or they go for Neachio, is another little town outside of Nafplion. And I went home. I brought some bread and cheese for them. I gave them bread and cheese, and I direct them how they can go there. And a few days later, a German soldier came to... No, not German, Italian... guy came to the store. He pretend he was a guy from Cyprus, and he wants to go to Cyprus. How he can go? We felt he was not the right person. We knew something wrong there, you know, and he left. Or we're going to do that to the Italians, we do that to the Germans, you know. He was speaking Greek, you know. And a few days later, he came with about 10 carabineros, they beat the, they broke my shoulder, my jaws, my teeth, everything, hitting me with a, even with a guns, with a Kodak in the back of the guns. Anyway, my father went in the back and took the machete, knife. He was coming out with a machete in his hand to fight the Germans, the, to kill some Italians, because they're beating me. And I saw my father and said, "Dad, please, please, αυτό κάτω αυτό που βαστάς, you know, leave this, ό,τι έχεις πέταξε το κάτω, μην κάνεις τίποτα. Γιατί if we do anything, we know right away they're gonna kill us. How can I take my mother, my sisters with me, or my brother George was not there that night, but how can I take him? I could run away from them, it was dark, but what about the others? They're gonna kill all the others, and I stay there. And he, they were asking me, what do I know about people? They come in the village, and they, where they go? I say, I have no idea. I have my first time I heard it, you know. And now they try to force me to say things. And I decide if I say anything, I'm dead. If I don't say, might be I'm dead, 1%, they might be believe me. And I stuck with that one. They took me to a Tripolis, to the generals there, to colonels, what they call them. And they asked me if I want to help him. I said, yeah, sure, I'm going to help you. He says, you have to go around and find out where they go, the Englishmen or the Cyprus people. I said, okay. And I went around pretending. I asked people, but I never asked anybody anything. I just got back, and they asked me what happened. I said, I don't know anything yet. I couldn't find out anything. And a few days later, they two guys came and they say, tomorrow we're going hunting. You want to come with us? And I decide not to say no, but if I say no, that's worse yet. I said, yeah. Or you come with us, he says, to show us. And I went to find my friend Nick, Nicholas. And I said, Nicholas, tomorrow I'm going hunting with the two carabineros, two Italians. They might be killing me up there. You want to come with me? He says, yeah, I'll come. And early in the morning they were in the house. We start walking up to the mountains. And then we didn't kill anything anyway. I didn't have a gun. And Nick asked one of the carabineros, he says, give me your gun, I'm going to shoot this time. And he gave the gun to him. I tried to tell Nick, don't take it. No, he took it. He held it about 10 minutes. I was doing that to him, you know, without what? Winking to him. I said, don't look, because the other guy had a gun. If Nicky tried to do this, they shot him right away, and they could have shot me too, right away. Anyway, no, Nick, I took Nicky because he had a dog, hunting dog. And I said to him, well, please, Nick, come with me. Yeah, anyway, we came down. They took me to Tripolis again to report what I know. I refuse. I don't know anything. Nobody talks to me. Nobody knows anything in my village. Nobody says anything. Probably they believe me or they got tired of me. They didn't bother me anymore. Yeah, that was all until the communists came down.
When you came back, when you're in the mountains with the Italians.
Yeah, my mother had a bean soup.
Did you, when you were in the mountains there, you thought they were going to kill you, right?
Up the mountains, but when we come down, I thought, well, I had a chance to live yet.
I saw you.
My mother had white bean soup, white beans soup. And I asked him if they want to eat. And they said, yeah, okay. My mother make 3 plates, she brought it to the store. You know, we wait a little soup. And they left. After that, they never come back to ask me anything. But I was in fear all the time. Something. Now, that now is the time for me to go to the gorillas. To the communist gorillas. Because there was no other organization in Peloponnesus, only the gorillas. It was one organization far away, which was a right-wing organization against the Germans. But I could go there. They could catch me on the way, for sure. And I decide, if I go to the gorillas, to the communists, not to be a communist, just to fight against Italians and Germans with a gun. What about my family? My father was too old, my mother too old. They could go no place. You know, and what's going to happen if I leave? They're going to ask for me. I'm not here. They grab the others and kill them all. And I decide I better die instead to punish my family. You know, I could do that. And I stay. Oh, yeah, that's all. Until I came here.
But between that time, talk about what was going on between the communists and the Germans and Theonona's husband, father, and what things would happen.
While we were under occupation and after, the Communist Party declared themselves they are communists, all the villageers and a lot of people, they did not like him. We find out the time we were saying our main enemy, because we knew the Germans going to leave someday. The United States and England going to defeat them. We knew that. And now we say the main enemy to us is the communists, the Greek Communist Party. That was the main thinking. It was not the Germans anymore. I'm 41, 42, we didn't know what was going to happen. At 43, 44, we said the Germans are going to live someday. They're going to lose the war. We knew that. I don't know the Americans if you knew that or not. But we had the feeling the Germans are going to lose the war because they couldn't go through Russia. And now there's a time the United States was making too many opla, you know, too many, how do you call it?
Weapons.
Weapons, yeah. We knew that. United States would make the weapons by, like we make the wheat through the machines, you know. One gun after the other, we're dropping down millions of guns. We knew that. I mean, we had a feeling that's going to be the way. But the main enemy now is Russia to us. Russia and the Greek Russia, the Greek people, where they were guerrillas, AM guerrillas, but they were not against the Germans. My feelings were against us. How are they going to kill us someday? Were the Germans going to live? And that's why I went, I decided, instead of, because they started picking people from the village, they come down nighttime, they knock your door, they bust in the house and pick somebody, whatever they want. They pick two teachers one day, they took up the mountains, they kill them. After that, they killed our people, my cousin. Don't tell me this man, my friends, or they work for Greece. Not at all. They were just working for their own power, for Russian power, you know. And that's why I decided to be, we call it tagmata, asfalias. All my village, all my friends, all the people, they took guns and support. After that, they killed the two teachers. We didn't allow the guys to come in our village. They never came, though, but we could fight them. And the other villages all around, they had guns against the guerrillas now, 1943, we took guns. But we never had any fight with them because they never came down. But my cousin died 1942, I think. The guerrillas killed him. I mean, Yeah, because the time we organized against, now we know they are communists. And we don't like communism in my town or around the towns. We decide, this is after the war, after the occupation, during the occupation, we decide to do something because they come down to the village, they order to take things, and they grab two, three people, they don't like it. For some reason, if he says something against them, they kill him. They cut his neck off. And we got against them. We organized a, how you call it, Hiti? No.
He, yeah, Hitas.
He. But we were not he. We were about the same thing, but we did have a, we had a guns, which I think they took it from the Germans. We had a guns, and be on the, around the village and support the village. We didn't allow the guerrillas to come down and grab people or anything, you know. What was we felt was a real bad thing, but we were afraid more than the guerrillas than we were afraid from the Germans. We didn't like Germans, not at all. We hate them. But we knew if the Germans leave, the guerrillas are going to take over, they're going to be worse than Hitler.
What are going to be communists? When you're saying guerrillas, you mean communists?
Communists. I am communist. Communist guerrillas.
You saw the movie Eleni?
Yeah, about something like that. Yeah.
Do the people understand?
Well, a lot of people understand. John, as you know, still in Greece, is a, communist is about 10%, right? 10, 11%. That time, they give you fear. All the Greeks are communists. No, they were not. But they were afraid of the communists. They're going to come down. If you say anything against them, they're going to take you and kill you in the mountains. That's the people who are not talking against them anymore. But we knew they are communists and they are group Russian idea, which we never have to accept that one, especially the villages, all the outside, the villages and the farmers, small villages. The only thing, a lot of communists they had in Athens, you know, Athens, Piraeus, but not the other Greece. The other Greece, they didn't want, they didn't like the communists. They forced some people. Like they kill a German, the German go in the village, they kill 20 people and make the youngsters run away in the mountains with them. That was a tactic they used. They come to my village, they kill one German. And the Germans come and pick up 50 or 100 to kill them. Yeah, they had me one time where I opened my grave outside of Tripolis because they kill a guy, they kill one German in the next village. And Germans came in the village and pick up about 50 of us, two, three trucks. You know, they come to your house, You cannot hide anymore. They put us in the trucks. They took us up outside of Tripolis in the prairie, and we make dig. They make us dig a holes, 10 by 10 or 10 by 15, 10 by 20. We make about 5-6 holes like that, about 8 feet deep, you know. And then, probably, thanks God, they change their mind, you know. They change their mind, they pull us back to the trucks. We went to our village again. And then we knew that's very bad, something going to happen any minute. You know, they're going to kill a lot of people, the Germans. And now is the time, after suffering under the fear all the time, I had a night time, I made a little room behind the barns. I built a room, and we slept all there, all every day, for a year. My sisters, George and I, we slept in the room. In that little room, I had it with a blue paper inside, cover. You could see the light, you know, because we had a light inside, tried to read something, or you know. And we went through the horse feeding place. I had drop door on the back. You open it, we go in, my mother dropped the little door, we hook it from the inside, and my mother put the food there for the horse, you know. In the morning, we get up, nothing happens, because now we are afraid from a gorilla, the communists, to come and punish us.
Why?
Because they didn't know why the Italians take me to Tripolis, what I'm doing. You know, I had two enemies. I had the gorillas, Italians, and Germans. I had three enemies now. They're looking for me. I don't know from where I'm going to get it. You know, that was a disappointment.
Back there in Greece in those days,
yeah,
there in the Choria, you had cousins, your own cousins you grew up with,
yeah,
who became your enemy.
Real enemy. Yeah, they went on the other side.
Or friends, or maybe people that weren't your friends, yeah. Like Ennis Puig.
Yeah, we knew them. They were, yeah, friends. They became our enemy.
Now, what happens if they
split up family? You know, was. Before we had the laughs, we had joking around, play cards. That's all they do in the villages all winter for the rain and snow out. They have nothing to do. They feed the animals and they come back in the cafe near and they play cards. Some for money, some just for fun. But during the war, that went away. Because during the occupation, during the communist occupation we had, you didn't know what real friends are. You were afraid to express yourself. You know, you said 90%, I believe, we are all the same, but who's the guy, the underground guy, who tries to hurt you, hurt everybody there, you know, who works for the Russians, for instance, and he never uncovered himself. He's still covered.
Hey, Jeff Carlin again here. Interesting note, a couple of quick things I want to give you a little context on. Sparrow's talking about the occupation and the resistance and wanting to be involved and realizing that, unfortunately, that the resistance is really a wing of the communists, and it's not something he or anybody, as he says, the farmers will take lightly and even fall for. But what he's talking about is specifically there, because the ELAS, or the National Liberation Front, or in Greek, which thanks to the internet, I can bring you the correct pronunciation of that and not try to say it myself, which is
Ellinikos Lykos Apelephterotikos Stratos.
In English, but in Greek,
Ellinikos Lykos Apelephterotikos Stratos.
Exactly. With the ELAS, which those who may not know, may or may not know, is essentially 1941, after the ex-Soviet thing fell apart and the Shermans invaded Soviet Russia, the communists within Greece decided they needed a military wing, and thus was born the National Liberation Front, which was an armed resistance with heavy, heavy, heavy communist undertones and overtones. Conducted guerrilla warfare and tactics and things. But unfortunately, Spiros will tell you that they were also trying to weed out non-communists among the general populace. And they do some terrible things to the family here. And it's not a wonderful life. And there's no laughing and dancing, as we've learned here in Greece during this time of occupation. And this ELS was just a terrible plight on the people. And as we'll hear here, after the Germans do pull out, then it becomes even worse. But interestingly, and after the war, after the Germans have left, which you'll hear here in a few minutes about that, the Marshall Plan kicks in, and it's our introduction to Truman the Mule and the famous story of Truman kicking young Spiro right in the head.
Now, after they left, after the Germans left, you know, was they tried two drills before they really left. They pick up one day, they pick up everything and put in the cars, and we thought the Germans left. We started celebrating, and about 6 hours later, they are back. They done that again, the drills, how they move back. And we knew they're going to move someday, now very near, you know. Anyway, they left October something, November, I think it was October, November. Now we went in Tripolis, with a lot of people in Tripolis, to support Tripolis, not to allow the guerrillas to come in Tripolis until our government from Africa come back. But our government, because it was in big trouble the time, as we read the book, they ordered us to drop the guns, leave the guns, and nobody could bother you. And then we done that.
After the war in Greece, the Marshall Plan. What happened to the Kurio?
The Marshall Plan actually helped Greece a lot. The Marshall Plan was to bring up a little bit the morale postulates to the Greek people. At least they have a friend to help them. And they start bringing flour, animals like mules. We got one. If anybody had somebody here in the United States want to send a mule, I think it was costing $50 or $100 to deliver to you in your house. Maybe it cost $200-$400 to bring it down, but they charge him $50. The United States paid the government paid the rest. And that we had they gave a lot of money, I mean millions, I think, I don't know, 400 millions or 300 millions. But the politicians took the money and they built the hotels in Greece, which helps, right? But the little people in the farm, they get nothing. But the politicians, their friends, they build hotels, they build this with that. Actually, that helped Greece in one way. But direct help to the farmers, to the people, the villages, no, it was not much, nothing, almost nothing. Just a little flour once in a while, for a short time.
What did you get on Mulari?
Money came. A Truman, we call him. My father named it Truman.
Si.
The mule. My sister sent a mule down to us. And I went to Tripolis, which is 6 miles away, as I said before. I pick up the mule, and I like it right away. I was afraid. It was about 200-300 mules in one barn. And I didn't know which one might be ours. And I looked some big ones, like those Budweiser horses. And I said, my God, we cannot support that horse. And Happiness was a beautiful mule to us. When I took it home, I walk, you know, with a mule. I have a capistri, I put him on, and I took it home. When my father, right away, when I saw it, when I saw the mule coming, they wait, you know, they were outside the house, and I was walking, they saw me, and my father says, "Oh, a Truman." You know, his name is Truman. And everybody knew the name. Our mule name was a Truman, you know. Yeah, then it was funny. It was a big help at the time to us with a mule, you know. But, that time when that horse hit me, we was fixing the potatoes. We had a farm with a little farm, you know, about a quarter of acre or 1 acre. Africa. And we had potatoes there, plant potatoes. And I used a mule to pull some kind of machine to excavate the earth a little bit between the potatoes. I was about the time, about 29. And now, we had the mule on the little hill. I let him loose up there to eat something, to stay up there. Our land was straight land, you know. And I saw the mule was not eating, was standing like that and shooking his legs, hitting boom, boom, his legs down. And I went to see what happened. And I saw about thousands of horse flies on his legs. And I want to chase him away. I bent down and I went with my hand on his legs to chase away the flies because started bleeding the mule in the front legs. And the mule was still doing that, hitting the ground, just the mules to the flies to go away. And all of a sudden I got a hit on the head. I didn't know where. The only thing I remember, I thought my skull, that the whole top with the hair was out. Out was, fell on back of my shoulders. And my brains was now in the open. My brains were in the open. And I felt the air, little breeze we had at the time, was going through my brains, like you blowing, like you blow. And I thought the whole head on top, there is no cap, was on the back of my shoulders. And I was standing like that. I didn't want to touch anything because I'm still alive, you know. I didn't touch anything because my hands were dirty from the earth, from the ground. And my sister called me Tiatula. She says, "What happened?" I said, "Come over here." She came over and she asked me again, "What happened?" I said, "Listen,
I'll tell you what to do. Don't do anything different. Only what I'm telling you. Says, yeah, tell me what you want. And I didn't go to my mind to say, she didn't see me, I don't have a cap. I said, listen. Says, what? I said, reach on the back. Grab my scalp, you call it, from the hair. Don't touch it from inside. And bring it back, I told her, bring it like that and put it on top of my head. The blood was going all over. Blood all over. And I thought it was cut all over. My face was blue and black. She says, what are you talking about? I said, listen, I told you what to do. Do whatever I tell you. Don't do anything different. Reach back and grab my skull from the hair with my shoulders and bring it back slowly and put it on top of my head. She says, what are you talking about? I said, you listened? She says, yeah, I'm listening. I said, you don't see my skull, you see my brains, I said. She says, says, no, I don't see your brains. I said, from far away, about 3-4 inches higher from my head, I said, what's on top of here? She says, your hair. I said, you need to tell me, is not my brains here? She says, no. What is it? Your hair again. I said again. I said, you mean to tell me, right here I have the hair on top? She says, yes. And then I put my hair slowly and I touch my hair. And I said, my God, it's not open. I thought it was all over cut. I thought it was cut the whole top back. Oh, now, I was happy. I was not dead. I'm not going to die. And I said, Tula, I don't feel good. I'm going home. You finish and you take the things and come back. Come home. I went home and my mother was not home. My father, he was out, I think. And I went to bed. And I slept about 36 hours straight without waking. They saw me sleeping and Tula told them what happened. But they said, let him sleep. I know it was a bad thing to do. And that happens. Yeah, that was Truman.
Episode?
What?
Episode.
Episode?
Stupigari.
Not that one. A horse we had before. He didn't want to work. He was lazy bum. And he was tired, maybe. And we had Martina. My little sister, she was about 6-7 years old, stayed there and tell the mule to go. Go, you know, go around the well to bring the water up. And the mule, the horse was tired or didn't want to go, and they understand the weakness of the people. If they are little children, they bite them, they kick them. And Martina went to with a whip to whip his back to let him go. But he knew that Martina's whip was a baby, you know. And he started backing up. He started to go forward. Back it up. Bloom. He went in the well. And Martina came, I was in the store. Martina came in the store and she says to me, Epese. And she left right away. It was not too far, you know, the village. And I thought my mother fell in the well. You know, I knew something happens in the well. And I ran. Overpassed Martina, usually. Overpassed, I saw people there. And I look. I saw my mother there. And my heart
so became stronger, you know, because I thought for sure my mother was in that well. And then I look inside without asking anybody what happened, you know, no time to ask. I just look inside the well. Here's a horse who was going down like that. It was about 20, 30 feet water in it. You know, he was going around. Yeah, and I went down. They tied me with a rope, and I went down, and I got on top of the horse. But I was tied. Two, three friends of mine were holding the rope, and I trust them, you know. And if they let me, the horse could have killed me down there in his feet. And they throw me some other ropes, and I went through underneath the horse. Not underneath, but I bent down like that, and I put the rope, and I tied one here, right here, and one tied on his back legs, you know, in the stomach. And then we brought the horse up. I went up first, and then they brought the horse up. The first thing the horse came, when he came up, before he stand his feet, he tried to eat. It was a green, some kind of grass around the well. He was eating a very big appetite.
One final aside here, as Spiro is winding things down, I wanted to bring you a story that gets a little murky in the explanation of it, but the gist is Spiro was talking about how families are turned against each other, and John asks him about, you know, there was a family member who, you know, had to go before a judge, and why that judge was there, and it turns out that the judge was a communist who was a cousin who had a little money, and when the communists came, they picked him out, and he'll explain it here, but it's very interesting in talking about family on family and how that, you know, that impact of the communist fear, even in a minority of the population, it made things really hard for everybody. And we close the episode with Spiro realizing he has to leave for Athens to help the country stabilize itself after the Germans had pulled out.
What's a country? What is each country? Each country is a family. My family, and your family, and his family, we have our village, right? This village, the other village, all families, they have the city. They have the state. We're going higher, we develop the country. That's a family, right? One family. Because we live, we eat, everything on the group. But the other side, they want to take your freedom, your food, whatever you produce, they take them away. They want to feed their people and not to work either. We're still looking for slaves. Right? We don't. When you occupy a country, what you looking for? For slaves. Special with a, like Hitler, or Ortega, or Batista, or those guys. I mean, Cuba. They're all slaves, the people they couldn't get out. Where's the freedom? Because Russia thought, by doing those things, occupied countries from inside, just helping with guns and all those things. They thought, I think about 30 years ago, they thought by now they have occupied the world. When somebody cannot go any place he wants, or he cannot say his mind, that's not freedom. And every day to fear the guy who hurt you and he didn't like your ideas, he might be cut your neck.
and nobody gonna complain about you. That's why the people get down and they shut up, shut up, shut up for years to come.
You had a judge. You had communist judges in the Rivas.
Yeah, they were.
What happened? What happened in those times with the
the worst people? Not it was poor, but let's say the people, they didn't like the village because they came from some other place. Not because the village engineers, they didn't like them, but like here, when we come from Greece, we think sometimes the Americans don't like us because we are Jews or Greeks or something like that. And you have the inferiority on you sometimes, not all the time. That way, now I came from Greece, uneducated. In a right way, I got a Supreme Court, Supreme Court? One of the seven or eight. I'm one of the guys. You know, who am I to come from Greece, uneducated, and go in the Supreme Court and tell the Americans what to do? That was the village. He came from faraway places. He was a shoemaker, and he became, because he was a lefty, he became the judge of the village. And you said to say, yes, sir. They didn't allow the time to say, sir. But, yes, Your Honor. Or not Your Honor, yes, a judge, or whatever they call him. I never been to any of those things. I was never went close to see, except if I was me, I could be there. But other people, they had trouble between them or something. I never went to see what the heck he's talking about, who is he, why he's there, you know. Who is he to judge the village in your town? We are the same blood, almost cousins, all of us. To come, to bring another guy, uneducated, if he was educated and honest, I should say, yeah, maybe he's okay to judge me or anybody else. But he was lefty. Anybody was on the other side, he was wrong. You never find the real, you know.
And then after the war, how did?
But you see,
what I mean is after the war.
After the war.
Now all the Rijotis are there, still in the village.
Yeah, they're still in the village.
They remember who they want to rule. What happened to
them? Nothing happens to him. Nobody punish him. Nobody touch him. His sons, two sons, they are the most rich people in our village. The people love them. They didn't try to do the same thing the communists done it. The boys, two boys, they have a wholesale everything. They buy from the village, or they bring it to the village, they bring it to all over other villages in Tripolis, all over. You know, that means the people did go after them, didn't bother them.
Did anybody go after communists?
No, not at all. As long as we were happy, we were free. That's all was it.
When you see a movie like that, in Laney,
you see, they couldn't hurt us anymore. That's why, like I went back, right? Or we had a party. Maybe some resorters from my village didn't like the idea. But I'm not. I'm not there to start again those differences we had before.
I'm there to see my country people. I'm there to see my cousins or my friends, everybody happy. Like we find they were happy now, right? Most of the people in Greece. Otherwise, you could see 10, 11% communists, right? Where's the other 90%? Right? Or 80%. Let's say another 10% sympathizers, which they never declared themselves. Where's the other 80%? Now, I'll tell you. We are in Oklahoma, we are 80,000 or 70,000 people, right? When they decide to do something, we are 80,000. And they are, make groups of 5,000 people. They get organized, they are only 5,000. They take over, right? They kill a few policemen, they take over. And I say, why should I go kill myself? They're going to kill me. I'm not, stay home, I don't take a gun in my hands. You know. And then, what happened? They take over. That's a communist, they started like that. They kill a few people, and they follow great Alexander's tactic. I'm going to Egypt. I build a city. I leave 10 guys there. Right? And we're moving. I left 3 guys in Cairo, for instance. Even that time probably was a 500,000 people, 1,000,000 Cairo. And they had 3-4 Greeks. They controlled the Cairo. Or Alexandria, how many he left? He could leave. He didn't have so much army to leave 50,000 people there to control. No. Things are changing. It's not the same. But the communists, they had the village. There was 3 communists in the village. They controlled the village. Because you cannot do anything to them, or somebody maybe kill them, because they're going to bring army from here or there, they punish you, kill you, all. Great Alexander done that. Walking through, 2 guys here, 1 guy there, 1 guy, and it's a big series. He left 2-3 guys, 2-3 people, control.
Yeah.
When I was in the village, a friend of mine, which he belongs to AM.
When you say AM, say communist.
Communist, yeah. Belongs to Communist Party, Communist Party. He told me, you know what? He says they got you on the list. I said, for what? You're talking. I said what I said, because I talk, you know, a little bit, you know, what are we going to do with when they take over, you know. There is no life with them anymore, because all the scraps and the bad people are going to take over and tell you what to do. No freedom anymore. And my name went there somehow, and they had me on the list. And I shut up for a while, I didn't say anything. And I was, everything calmed down a little bit until I left. I went to Athens, 1944, you know.
I hope you enjoy part 3 of the Polycotti Project, where my father was making his way, and because he wanted to continue the fight against the communists, he was making his way to Athens. And this is the story of what he did, hiding under a truck of onions, trying to get through communist checkpoints on the way to the King's Palace. This is my father's story, not mine, on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.